this time of the year, the central courtyard at USC School of Cinematic Arts would usually be alive with activity. The excited buzz of prospective student tours, parents and children traipsing around with wide-eyed amazement, students behind cameras screaming, "Action!" The clicking of flashes as graduating students pose in their ceremonial regalia. But as the effects of the coronavirus pandemic continue to sweep across the globe, the empty silence in the school's courtyard seems to reflect the state of mind of so many across the community.
The hardest thing from this whole situation is making the decision to leave LA. I lost my jobs because of COVID-19, so I knew that I wasn't going to be bringing in any income after like the first week of May. So I had to get real serious with myself and make some adult decisions.
I'm Tracy Eglas, and this is SCA Journals, a podcast about the real human stories and struggles within this creative community. In this episode, I'll be taking you on a journey through the personal challenges and experiences of the community as we each strive to navigate through this crisis. A quick note before we continue. All of the interviews you're about to hear were done remotely over Zoom or by phone, and so please bear with the sound quality of some of the clips. I think of it as being reflective of an equally less than ideal moment in our lives. Okay, here's the episode. For many students, there's a lot of anxiety about the future, particularly those that graduated this May and are stuck in limbo at a pivotal moment in their careers. Like Erica, who's now feeling the heavy weight of her decision to give up everything to pursue a new career in film at nearly 40 years old.
Like, I came out to LA and I spent over $180,000 to go to this school. And what do I have now since Corona hit? It's $180,000 worth of debt. I don't have any jobs because there's no market right now.
And so she found herself making the very difficult decision to pack up everything, leave LA, and move back home. A move that felt very much like she was back at square one.
And I had to tell myself that I didn't fail.
I worry about this a lot. You know, like, what's going to happen?
That's Jay Chayarasmi, an international student who graduated last December. Only a few months into what felt like her dream job, she got laid off. But it's a particularly dire situation for Jay, because as a foreign student,
my work visa expires at the end of this year. If I don't apply for my visa application by then I have no choice but to go home to Indonesia, where I'm from.
The stamp on her student visa gives her only 1 year following graduation to establish the work experience, skills, and networks that are necessary to foster a lasting career. And now, with this indefinite lockdown, Jay's not sure how much time she has left.
I talked to my attorney about if the government, you know, would extend visa application because of this unprecedented time, but they say no, which sounds harsh, if I can be honest with you.
A lot of people already are on furlough or losing their jobs entirely. So I think that the wave of people looking for employment is going to be even greater. That's what can make the ground feel shaky.
Julian Bridges, another production student who graduated this May.
At this point, I'm just trying to take a deep breath and say, you know, we'll figure it out when the time is right. But I'm not quite sure what that means.
Taking that deep breath in the midst of so much uncertainty can be difficult, especially in an industry that puts so much emphasis on productivity and output.
You know, everyone's saying King Lear was written during a quarantine, and I'm trying to not think that way.
Some might be aware of a certain Twitter hashtag that trended in the first few weeks of the quarantine, emphasizing that King Lear, Shakespeare's famous tragedy, was written in its entirety during the bubonic plague. A challenge of sorts for creatives to seize this opportunity to, like Shakespeare, release their creative masterpiece.
We all judge ourselves and our self-worth based on how much we create. So then when we can't create or aren't forced to create, we like impose our own assignments on ourselves just for the sake of productivity. I would find myself getting to the end of a day, but I didn't let myself enjoy the empty day. I like flitted through my emails and like opened documents and tried to start screenplays and nothing happened. And it was like, I got to the end of the day and the day yielded no results, but I also didn't take a deep breath all day.
For Sarah Cross, another graduate production student, she didn't even have the time to think about creating a masterpiece.
My whole spring break was basically about getting my mom back to Colorado.
At the time, her elderly mother had been visiting from Colorado. With the borders closing, Sarah was determined to get her mother back home, where she could be better isolated and have access to her usual healthcare facilities. She had only a few days to make all the necessary arrangements, fly with her mother back to Colorado, and get her settled in. And then within the hour, she was on a plane back to LA before flights became unavailable.
My situation was very difficult, and yet it was not as difficult as if I had to move out. You know, people have had to move out of their housing at the last minute. I know a bunch of students have flown across the world to get home. One of our students in one of the classes was in the middle of driving cross country back to her parents in North Carolina. Like, there's a lot going on in people's lives that for the university to not understand, maybe we just need to suspend things for 2 weeks. Just push everything 2 weeks forward in the calendar. I don't know why that hasn't happened. You know, it makes no sense to just hit the ground running again and try to make all these changes and continue with a semester on the same schedule as if this wasn't happening.
Well, I think the judgment of everybody was the best thing we could do was to move ahead as best we could.
That's Dean Daly, the dean of the cinema school.
I would not have thought it was very healthy to have taken a break, because otherwise you could just make yourself sick by sitting around and thinking about it and listening to news. The mental health people that we talk to, and this is the advice we get from all of them, is just try to do as much of your normal routine as possible. So what I've been recommending to people is when you get up in the morning, do what you would normally do in the morning. If you normally get up and take a shower and do some kind of exercise, do that, however you modify it. Have a schedule for the day. I think it really helps. The more structure you can put in your life right now, the better.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say this. It gets a little tough to care after you watch the news. About 1,000 people a day are dying in the UK right now. And that doesn't include care home statistics. So it's probably double that, maybe 2,000 people a day.
That's Sam Hobson, who's also in his final semester of the program. Sam managed to catch a flight back to the UK right in the nick of time. And now, a staggering 8 hours ahead of Pacific time, he has the added challenge of managing the time difference while handling the sound editing for an advanced production class.
You begin to wonder, well, okay, well, why am I working in this film? What am I doing? What is any of my work worth when all these people are dying or in danger?
For Dorothy Lee, another production student, this is the most prevalent thing on her mind. With her sister working as an emergency physician in New York, one of the hardest hit states.
She tries not to like tell me a lot of details because she knows that I'll be worried about her. She usually doesn't tell the family about the things that we could be worrying about.
But then a news article came out confirming the first case at the hospital in Syracuse where her sister worked.
My mind is like stopped, like, okay, now it is for real. I kept seeing all these snippets of hospital workers having to wear bandanas, reusing all the PPEs where they're not supposed to, be disposed after one time use. That's when I realized I couldn't really wait for the help to come.
And so in her own little way, Dorothy joined in the fight.
I happen to have this box full of dust coveralls that I used last summer for my production. And there's still so much that was sitting in my car trunk, washed down with like really hot steam. And that's when I started making cloth masks for my sisters to make sure, you know, really, if it's all depleted, then maybe you can use this.
So far, Dorothy has sewn over 30 masks, and she's constantly reaching out and sending to family, friends, anyone who might need one.
If we don't protect them, like, who's going to? That's giving me incentive to, like, still make it, even though it's not as effective as a surgical mask or N95.
And it's a win-win for Dorothy, because aside from helping others in the crisis, the practice of sewing also helps her stay away from the feelings of anxiety.
I think the first few weeks I was practically useless. I was sitting on my bed thinking the sewing got me out of that funk. Keeping my hands busy, that'll keep my mind off.
Speaking about keeping hands busy, back at the school, management was faced with what seemed like an impossible task when the shutdown first happened.
It was like constant change. Every member of the team picking up what part of it they could as fast as they could.
For almost 30 years, Dean Daly has served as the dean of the cinema school. And according to her, this is by far the biggest crisis she's ever had to deal with.
At first we said, okay, in the trial period, we'll keep the labs open and we'll keep meeting 310 and 508 and we'll practice with the others. And then, you know, by the end of the week, it was clear to us, we're not going to be able to do this.
It quickly became an all-hands-on-deck situation. Faculty, staff, and authorities all working overtime to put the best structures in place to move forward effectively.
It's a natural disaster. What would we do in an earthquake? What would we do in a hurricane? Let's just start doing it.
And every member of faculty and staff rose to the occasion. Like Allison Lewis, who works for the school's operations department. Throughout the school year, they practiced meticulous drills and procedures, preparing for crisis or emergency situations. But this was one scenario they never anticipated.
I think probably the biggest thing has been like a fire alarm going off where we've actually had to execute, like getting people out of the buildings. Did we ever discuss pandemics? Not so much. So this is kind of a different beast.
A beast of a crisis, which has forced the faculty and staff to come up with creative answers to very difficult questions. Like, how does an academic program which relies so heavily on collaborating within the same physical space make that difficult transition to a virtual one?
I'm building new events that didn't exist before, that I think are exciting, that are really meant to create a sense of community even though we're physically apart.
That's Alex Ago. If you're a student at USC, you've probably received more than a few emails from him. Throughout the school year, he collaborates with filmmakers and agents to facilitate screenings and events for the community, integrating sophisticated themes and elaborate exhibitions, and inviting some of the biggest names within the industry to speak.
The core of what I do is meant really to be about giving students something special about their educational experience, recognizing that the events don't need to be these sort of glitzy, high-profile things. They need to be about making the students feel like they are at a place that cares for them and continuing to strengthen the sense of a community, even a virtual one. And that ultimately is at its core the value of what my work is.
And so after the shutdown, Alex began thinking of ways to replicate this rich community experience virtually.
I started to create some short film challenges, which are, you know, sort of a version of a 24-hour film festival. We're doing one right now that's called Zoomanji, and it's a, it's a challenge to basically make a short film that's told entirely through the use of Zoom.
It was an hour-long collection of short clips from the community, finding creative ways to share their new reality. Like this one, composed entirely of close-up shots on gloved hands, frantically cleaning, wiping, scrubbing surfaces over and over again. And seeing my schoolmates and professors again filled me with warmth and nostalgia. Particularly this one from 546 editing professor Amy Reynolds, recording her young son, Patrick, as he watches The Empire Strikes Back for the very first time. In the video, he sits cross-legged, back straight on the couch, his little eyes fixed to the screen. And then afterwards, a very serious request.
Mom.
Yeah, buddy.
Do you want to help me?
Help you what?
Defeat Darth Vader. Because he's the bad guy of space.
Talking about defeating bad guys. On the academic front, professors are faced with the Herculean task of transitioning to a virtual learning space, especially when it comes to a collaboration-heavy curriculum, like a directing class.
There really is no way to duplicate the experience of directing actors on set in a movie. So trying to come up with an alternate plan is challenging.
That's John Watson, who teaches the 477 directing class. Without the on-set environment for the students to practice directing actors, John has had to find creative ways to still give his students a valuable educational experience.
This week I have Ryan Coogler coming on, which is great. I think they'll really enjoy talking to him. And Sev Ohanian, they're going to be on together. I'm digging deep to some of my contacts. I'm going to try and see if I can get Morgan Freeman to do it. Everybody is now, you know, free. Everyone's now sitting around trying to figure out what to do. So, you know, why not is my attitude, is just see who I can get.
For students who have invested a lot of money to get the production experience these classes offer, it can be pretty disappointing to feel robbed of that opportunity.
The first thing I said to everybody is, we're going to make this movie. You know, big capital letters on an email. We're going to make this movie. Don't worry about it. It will happen. They will still have the experience that they would have had in the second half of the semester. And on top of that, they will have a series of discussions with good filmmakers. So that's my hope. Sorry, my grandson's making a noise in the background. Moving into another room. We've got the whole gang here. Three of my sons and a wife and grandson.
Hearing John's family in the background, his grandson chattering away, made me smile. It emphasized the fact that in this industry, there's such a separation between professional life and everyday life, that we rarely ever get the chance to see professors, staff, colleagues, as parents, grandparents, spouses. We rarely get the chance to realize that they're just as vulnerable and human as we are.
I said to my husband a couple of nights ago, I said, you know, I hope I've told you how grateful I am to have you, because it's wonderful that I'm not totally alone.
That's Dean Daly again.
And we can let other things get in the way sometimes. But one of the things we have to realize is we have short lives, which we need to appreciate, and we're fragile.
And in this time of crisis, the story of Tom Miller, the 546 faculty in charge of editing, truly drives home that message of human fragility.
I've never really had to think about my mortality before, so this time has forced me to start thinking about that and getting my will in order and getting all kinds of things in line in case I don't survive.
Before Professor Miller began his career as an editor at USC, he developed a serious condition in his vocal cords.
They were afraid that I was going to suffocate. And so in order to prevent that, they had to create a hole in my neck where I've had it for over 30 years now, where I can breathe. So you hear a very hoarse voice. It's because my vocal cords are stuck over my airway, and so it's just harder for me to get air in and out.
When coronavirus broke out, a virus that directly attacks the lungs, Professor Miller realized he was in an extremely high-risk demographic. He was 65 years old, the most vulnerable age group for the virus, and he had a hole in his neck that led straight to his lungs. Tom had to stop teaching and isolate himself much earlier than anyone else did. He's been quarantined in his home since the beginning of March. And because of his condition, it's likely that he might have to remain in quarantine much longer than most.
I cannot leave this house until there's a medical cure or at least drugs that stop the pneumonia from happening. Whereas most people will be able to get out, you know, in months, within the months. if in my nightmares, I think I'll be in the house for a year, year and a half. And so I have to develop the strength to be able to do that. First week, it was mentally challenging. I live by myself. I have no contact with anybody in my house. Most of my family is 2,000 miles away in Ohio. I was watching the news all the time. I was scared to death. I was sure I was going to die. I really couldn't concentrate. I didn't sleep for almost a week, except maybe 1 or 2 hours a night. It was the support of my friends and my family that kind of snapped me out of it.
And gradually, he began to actively seek out ways to shift his focus.
I've been working on things that I've always sort of poo-pooed, like meditation and EFT tapping, and I've been eating better. I've learning how to cook, which I've never cooked in 65 years. And I talk to my family and my friends, and they give me lessons online and they send me recipes. And I made broccoli for the first time, and I was so proud of myself. And everyone else just thought that was so funny. I'm just trying to take care of my body and thinking about living and not thinking about dying.
And so in this season when we're forced to stay home and do nothing, where several of us have been separated from our usual creative labels, camera operator, soundie, director, I was curious to find out, what are the new ways in which people are redefining or rediscovering themselves?
Until we stopped, I didn't realize how much pressure I was putting on myself to perform. And I was mad at myself because I was like, okay, you have to find something. You have to be productive. You have to find something to do. Read a book, something. And I just told myself, like, what if it's okay if you just do nothing? And like, be okay. Not just don't do nothing, but be okay with doing nothing right now. Make peace with it. And that night, I poured wine. I danced. I turned on like tunes and I danced.
Angela Colabella, a production student who also graduated this May. That night, for the first time in a long while, she turned the camera to herself, capturing that spontaneous moment of freedom and acceptance.
I watched myself and I looked so free. I was just in the moment. I forgot how it felt to be like that because I was always worried about the next thing, project, homework, work, relationships, lack of relationships, and the second that I just let that go and just allowed myself to be, it was so freeing.
Tayo Amos, a fresh graduate from the production program, has found a similar freedom in exploring a different form of creativity.
There's a lot of like karaoke apps, like you can just kind of like sing along with artists, anything that kind of promotes that element of play and freedom that is not reliant on some sort of output, I think is really important.
When I asked Tayo if we could hear some of her songs, she didn't think it would be such a great idea. But I was really intrigued by this concept of doing karaoke with other people online. So I found an app and began experimenting.
Is even more than anyone that you adore can.
Love is all that I can give to you. Love is more than just a game for two.
I think I might have found my true calling.
Yeah, do you like my tomato plant? I'm really proud of them.
For Sam Hobson, he's turned to a more peculiar hobby in quarantine, tomato planting.
I've got my first tomato growing now. It's still green, but it's almost there. I reckon another 5 days or so. And
that's your very first one.
Exactly. I'm really pleased. It's my child.
He tilted the camera on his laptop proudly to show me the lone plant sitting on his ledge in a small pot. And barely visible among the green leaves was a tiny budding tomato. When I asked him exactly what he intends to do with this child once it's all grown,
I think maybe some sort of caprese salad or possibly a bruschetta.
Are you going to feel bad about eating it? Like, this is something that I toiled to like nurture and grow.
I'll have to let you know then. And now you say it, I could feel my heart welling up. But...
Casey Osterberg, another graduate production student, has her hands full, doubling as a full-time student and mother in isolation.
I'm not sleeping. I have double work now. I'm teaching her. I'm writing, or I'm figuring out something, and then I have to switch into a math problem that I haven't done in I don't know how long. Now I have no time to myself. I was sitting behind my laptop and I fell asleep with my laptop on and my head just nodded down. Take a 15-minute nap, and then I'm going to wake up again and keep going, because you have to just keep going.
And now, stuck together in tight quarters, the eating habits of her husband have never been more prominent.
Does he have to chew this loud? Like, do I need to hear every chomp? Like, what is going on? Are we eating the same food?
But despite the challenges, there are moments that have been transformative to her experience of motherhood, like getting past the need to be perfect.
I was just had to be this perfect mom, like this level of perfection in terms of time, quality of time, questions, that I look her in the eye, make sure that my eyes light up when she comes in the room, you know, when we're in pre-production or if I'm shooting that weekend, or I literally would be dying inside, but I would make myself go and calm down and sit next to her and rub her leg or hold her hand. I have to sit here calmly and let go of everything, because I didn't get to see her very often.
Casey realized that what her daughter needed more than anything else was to know that her mom was there for her.
Now that I'm around, it feels like there's a new connection to see how she maneuvers and how clever and how she sees the world. That to me is so rewarding, like to literally watch someone else figure out how they're going to find their place in the world.
The same way each of us has strived to find our own place in this changing reality. A reality that will raise a unique set of questions when life returns to business as usual. Like, what impact will this crisis have on the industry? How will this situation affect on-set production? How will it change the way we approach filmmaking?
I would be really interested to see if Hollywood goes back to a model of making cheaper films that make solid return on investment, instead of pouring $500 million into making and then $500 million into promoting these films upon which their entire revenue lives or dies. Like, Netflix in particular is financing films by filmmakers who are having an increasingly hard time getting their films made for a theatrical experience. But when they make them for Netflix, they're becoming wildly successful. And then those filmmakers can keep making movies, as opposed to spending 90% of their life trying to raise money.
That's Alex Ago again. And while this might be a good projection for independent filmmakers, he shared his thoughts, however, on how this shift might impact the theaters.
It's going to really eat into a lot of the profits for the theaters, because distributors are now opting to release things online that would have gone theatrical, and that's been a kind of a gentleman's agreement for decades that hasn't been violated, but Universal's now doing it. The way that theaters and studios split revenue is heavily weighted toward into the benefit of the studio in the initial week or two of release, and then it gradually starts to tip more towards the theaters. Meaning that the longer a film is actually doing well at the box office, the more the theaters are profiting. And if people know that they don't have to wait 6 months, but they only need to wait a week, they just might give up on having to see a movie in a theater altogether.
Absolutely.
So what does that mean for when the theaters reopen?
No one has the answers just yet. But the one thing we all know for sure, unified against one global enemy, there's a great deal more that connects us than separates us.
We're all in the same damn boat on this little bitty planet spinning around, you know, in the middle of nowhere. And this virus doesn't know about borders. This virus doesn't know about political parties. It doesn't know about religion. So I don't know. I guess if I have any hope is that maybe we'll finally recognize a little more what a global community we are.
My hope is that I do survive this, and then my hope is that people start reprioritizing what's important to them, and maybe it's not money and career, or maybe it's your family and your friends and appreciating your physicians, appreciating the Amazon drivers, appreciating the people that work in the grocery stores that we couldn't survive without, these people that maybe we just never gave them a thought before.
And that empty silence in the once vibrant courtyard at the SCA emphasizes special moments that we might also have taken for granted.
I just miss being around people. That's been the greatest part of coming to USC and being at the SCA for me, of anything else, is getting to enter a physical space where you're part of a community, and being able to like walk among a group of people that you know, many of whom you have some kind of connection with, is like a really beautiful thing. And it's too bad that this is our last semester, and it's like, I don't know if I'll ever do that again.
The day I walked out and realized I wasn't going to come back, I was going to work from home, and I walked to an empty courtyard where I'm so used to seeing all of you talking with each other, and it was really painful. I miss you when I think about you, and I just look forward to the time when I can stop you in the elevator and ask you how you're doing. That would be a very nice moment to have again.
And those moments will come once again. The moments of working together in the same spaces, exchanging creative ideas with unbridled excitement, and helping one another achieve our wildest dreams. The hope is that on the other end of this crisis, we would have learned how important it is to truly cherish each and every one of those moments. A very big thank you to all who participated in this beautiful story and the team that worked long hours to bring it all together. The editors, Esther Kim and Lorraine Wheat, Abhishandra Sin, who helped with writing, August Burton, who helped with producing, David Miles Lewis for the wonderful music, and Jay Chayarasamy for mixing. In the next episode, we'll be taking a deep dive into the issue of mental health within a performance-heavy environment like the SCA, exploring the harsh realities, the challenges, and the work that's being done. Here's a clip from that episode.
And I think that that's just the best part about USC. You go here and you meet a ton of people with radically new ideas. It's just the best of the best wanting to be filmmakers.
And Sergio didn't know this at the time, but his journey at the SCA would be unexpectedly cut short. Because nothing could have prepared him for the hardships of powering through such a cutthroat environment while struggling with a mental illness. I'll see you on the next episode of SCA Journals. Until then, fight on, tribe.